This audio chapter is licensed with a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial License, with permission granted by the authors and narrators. This license enables reusers to distribute, remix, adapt, and build upon the material in any medium or format for non-commercial purposes only, and only so long as attribution is given to the creator.
Higher Education for Good, Teaching and Learning Futures. Edited by Laura Chernyevich and Catherine Cronin. Chapter 5. Why Decolonizing Knowledge Matters, Deliberations for Educators on That Made Fragile. By Dina Zoe Beluigi. Please note that in this audio version, passive in-text referencing has been edited for ease of listening. The full and correct details of in-text references are accessible in the original published version of this text. The reference list is at the end of this audio recording. The voice you hear is an AI-generated clone of the author's voice in 2024 for this audio version, created with permission by the author and the book editors. I begin with the abstract for the chapter. Reimagining teaching, learning, belonging, and curricular design are all very important. However, when their relation to knowledges and the interests such knowledge formations serve is marginalized from the RE membering required of such imagination, it is deeply problematic. This chapter grapples with the question of why decolonizing knowledge matters for teaching and learning. It shares a selection of important considerations at this point in time. It draws intertextually to deliberate about A. Why knowledge singular should be decolonized within the modern Western-oriented university. B. Why the decolonization of knowledges matters, with consideration of their relation to the formations of the self, political, social and ecological in education, and see what the potential acts of decolonizing knowledges through education holds for engendering critical and generative roles which educators should occupy. As a way into this deliberation, the chapter begins with observations of the phenomenon of what seems like either educators' avoidance, ignorance, or passing the buck. On the question of the transformation of knowledges in the university in post-colonial contexts. Introduction. Central to the authority and functions of the university are the politics of knowledge recognition, legitimation, production, and reproduction. The calls to decolonize knowledge and to decolonize the curriculum remind us that education should not be passive dissemination of knowledge. Educators for the common good have a duty to rise to this challenge. Thus, while this chapter's focus is on why decolonizing knowledge matters for those operating at the microcurriculum, the acts of decolonizing necessitate extending beyond the safe spaces of teaching and learning, and beyond the university if there is indeed a commitment to serving the global common good. The chapter is written by an educator and a researcher of higher education. The process of composing this text was one where I thought about and for educators' agency in relation to the larger conditions of possibility for the decolonization of knowledge. While I too have engaged in related struggles within a university in the global north, the layers of narration in this text are underpinned by an Afropolitan orientation informed by critical, personal, professional, and academic deliberations as a person who is South Africa born and educated. A central thematic around which the chapter is shaped is ethico-political responsibility. Due to the scope and focus of this chapter, this is primarily concerned with educators' agency. This critical dialogue about the conditions of possibility is not to be confused with the transference of blame or of deficit onto educator communities who are always already overburdened and often decapacitated. Rather, threaded throughout are concerns about conditions at the meso and macro level, and critiques about that and those which constrain such agency, and constrain educators' imaginaries of their agency and practices of collective resistance to such constraints. These critical discursive deliberations are informed by the sources I include in this chapter, observations and realizations from my research, and learning from the scholarship of others. The resultant chapter is thus an intertextual offering to this anthology, made humbly as an homage to the works of the many educators it references, from whose contributions I believe there is much value for learning, critique, and, in turn, space for further contributions by educators. The chapter now moves to the next section, titled Relinquishing of Transformative Agency When Related to Knowledge Within Teaching and Learning. I begin with observations from recent research projects, which ask questions about how academics situate and construct the locus of their agency to contribute to the transformation of the university. During interviews, my collaborators and I noticed that most participants would often avoid discussing the meso and macro levels of higher education, even when prompted. An example is the research project led by Dr. Nandita Banerjee Dahwan and myself in universities in India and South Africa, for which publications in the reference list are dated 2020, 2021, and 2023. We noticed that sociocultural considerations of collegial relations, academic development, governance and management of institutions, research teaching dynamics, and issues of knowledge were rarely included. Where the participants of our studies demonstrated their capacity to articulate, reflect, and be critical about their agency to affect change was at the level of microcurriculum, that is, about the teaching, learning, assessment, methods, topics, relations within the classes that they taught. While I do not refute the importance of initiatives, documentation, and scholarship to do with the microcurriculum, it takes joined-up approaches to academic practice and academic structures to effect substantive change across the ecologies of higher education. Questions of agency, transformation, and the university are important because academic freedom is premised on academics' engagement in matters related to the professional freedoms of education, research, governance, socially engaged academic freedom, and the human rights of freedom of expression. However, context plays a role in the conditioning of agents. The participants of the research projects to which I refer above were situated in South Africa and India. These are two contexts with undeniable academic unfreedoms in their histories, and where the majority of their populations were excluded from the publics of the so-called public goods. Institutional interventions and policies were created in response to democratic constitutional obligations to address such legacies. Thus, one might expect these changes in conditions to have engendered critical consciousness of academics' transformative agency, and that, due to such conditions, current academics would situate the locus of their agency in a number of spaces across the ecology of the university. One might hope that this would be particularly enabling for academics from social groups, which were structurally recognized as historically unprivileged, marginalized, or excluded. However, this is not what was observed. Participants almost exclusively constructed the microcurriculum as the primary legitimated arena for them to exhibit their creativity, benevolence, and occasionally vulnerability. For those minoritized, such as Black academics in historically white institutions in South Africa and Adivasi academics in India, the microcurriculum offered a retreat from the fractious dynamics of the other spaces of the university, where many continued to face discrimination and misrecognition. Many expressed frustration that their transformative agency was limited to literally embodying compliance to employment affirmative action quotas. The majority of all the participants who were interviewed seemed to take the relinquishing of their responsibility for granted. Passively entrusted to researchers, learned societies, and publishers validated by established traditions of the global institution. Of concern is that such resignation cut across both those critical and those uncritical of global inequalities in universities and in terms of knowledge production. This is a paradox for praxis. On the one hand, most of the educators interviewed were challenging of ivory tower constructions of the campus and virtual classroom as a white cube where the outside world is othered. Some of these acted on their commitment to conscientize their students about aspects of the political, historical, ethical, economic, cultural, social relations, oppressions, and injustices of their societies and global dynamics. They often facilitated their students' actions for change when facing outside of the university. On the other hand, for various reasons, they omitted utilizing their academic agency to affect the ecology of higher education and from their students' critical consciousness. In such ways, they reproduce the dulling of active academic citizenry. There may be many reasons for, justifications of, and influences on, such avoidance of the agency to engage with structural issues, be they ignorance, collusion, self-preservation, etc. Much academic development reinforces artificial distinctions between the questioning of content and form by focusing on the professionalization and quality assurance of teaching, assessment, and microcurriculum design. This may be the result of the segregations between academics' development for teaching, as distinct from that for research. However, knowledges move and morph within and well beyond the boundaries of the classroom. As alluded to above, knowledge was rarely identified by participants as a consideration for transformation, and even less rarely discussed with confidence when discussing their transformative agency. Perhaps the stay-in-your-lane enculturation dynamics enforced by current neoliberal employment practices had imposed borderlines on the increasingly sessional, precarious, teaching-only educators' practice and imaginaries. Such meso-level dynamics school academics through institutional curriculum, norms, and values, and or through disciplinary curricula. Conditions such as these have impoverished constructions of academic freedom and minimized its relation to the longer struggles for freedom from such systems as colonization, patriarchy, and local and global hegemonies. The tasking and inspiring of educators to enact their transformative leadership, to challenge inappropriate uses of power, and work with collectives, including students, against structural injustices has been informed by the contestations of various proponents and traditions across time. Social movements often begin well beyond the academy. Their lenses and understandings have infused various critical traditions within it, including from curriculum theory, feminisms, queer theory, post-colonialisms, and postmodernisms. This chapter is situated within the current renewal of decolonization and grapples particularly with why the decolonization of knowledge matters for teaching and learning for the common good. The next section asks the question, why knowledge? A note to listeners before the AI-generated voice proceeds. The singular version, knowledge, is placed within inverted commas or scare quotes throughout the written version of this chapter, while the plural version is not. Knowledge stratifications are commonplace within contemporary higher education. These stratifications are explicitly and implicitly practiced by those who teach, albeit with some challenge exerted by educators and scholars. As I discuss in this section, for instance, it is not uncommon that inherited value judgments about which knowledges matter become most visibly imposed within summative assessment regimes. Examples include penalizing students for the use of first-person writing or for using non-academic qualifiers as external reference such as work experience. Such practices are in part informed by the devaluing of a posteriori knowledges gained from experience and privileging of a priori knowledge independent of experience. The dominant construction of the former in the modern Western-oriented university is that it is limited because it is gained subjectively and is situated in context. The latter is lauded as universal and objective. This Kantian distinction informed the denigration of value ascribed to knowledges gained from the informal education of social institutions, family, religion, group identities such as through racialization, genderization, minoritization, etc., from the non-human, including the so-called natural world and spiritual realms, and from individual life experience. Against these is the elevation of knowledges gained through so-called disinterested inquiry, undertaken for a good greater than one grouping that is public good, legitimized through academic communities, peer review, publication, etc. That knowledge is then explicitly reproduced and taught by those given authority that is teachers through the formal micro-curriculum. Another dominantly recognized distinction of knowledges is that of the influential ancient Greek thinkers, such as Aristotle, who constructed knowledge in terms of its appropriateness for its purpose or ends, telos, creating distinctions between inquiry as theoretical for its own sake, productive, instrumental towards making something, involving planning, functional creativity and skills or mastery, and practical, a moral disposition or wisdom for judgment-making in ethical and political life that involves a relation between the two dimensions of theory and practice. The latter has informed much debate about how knowledge is acquired, learnt, honed, etc. A reoccurring question that underpins these attempts at stratifying knowledges is, what knowledge should be valued in the formal curriculum? Less acknowledged are the dynamics of power that determine who is asking, whose responses to that question are heard, the impositions of appropriateness in should, and the singularity of the construction of knowledge. Ethical contestations about the effects on those and that undervalued that have raised by those within and those beyond the university seem to have had negligible impact. The renewed calls to decolonize knowledge as part of the larger process of decolonizing the university are calls to action underpinned by long-asserted concerns about the unjust politics of knowledge legitimation. The relation of knowledge to power undergirdles the legitimacy of the university as a gatekeeping institution. It is that relation which ascribes it authority, and by implication, those who teach and research become authorities and trustees of knowledge. Written acknowledgments of the association between power and knowledge and wealth and legacies are old. This citation is the words of Imam Ali, who lived between 559-661 AD. Quote, "Knowledge is power and it can command obedience. A man of knowledge during his lifetime can make people obey and follow him, and he is praised and venerated after his death. Remember that knowledge is a ruler and wealth is its subject. Those who accumulate wealth, though alive yet, are dead to realities of life, and those who gather knowledge will remain alive through their knowledge and wisdom even. After death, though their faces may disappear from the community of living beings, yet their ideas and knowledge which they left behind and their memory will remain in the minds of men." Unquote. The delegitimation of certain knowledges is an assertion of power. Those decisions about what informs the archive and the canon, which I have misspelt purposefully with two N's, as in the weapon, impact on the hierarchical selections of included, excluded, centered, marginalized, unprivileged. Questions that arise are, in whose interests are these acts? Which knowledges are misrecognized and unvalued, and why? How is this problematic, rooted in binaries of colonial, indigenous, scientific evidence, belief system, dominant, oppressed? In raising such questions, solidarities extend across time and beyond the decolonial interest to those whose voice, read, expression, participation, authority has been repressed by various systems of oppression. These solidarities include questioning patriarchy, whiteness, ableism, heteronormativity, authoritarianism, etc., including cultural imperialism and colonialism. The global imaginary that emerged through European modernity and colonialism exerted hegemonic spheres of influence through the university's various forms and functions. These influences acted on the character and politics of subordinated human and non-human subjects and contexts for the purposes of creating or maintaining power relations of inequality and oppression. The supposed goods of progress and civilization were a convenient mirage masking the gains of empires. While occupation of land, extraction of natural resources, physical violence, and the removal of language rights and freedom of belief are the more obvious forms of such hegemony. Their exertion through the educational function, and often with the collusion of education, is of particular consideration for this chapter. The modern university, its fundamentals forged through Western Europe's aesthetic relation to the Enlightenment, enacted its subjugations, accumulation, and relations of conquest in various ways. Examples of its formalization extend from the settler colonial university in Canada, explored by Stein, 2020 for instance, to the apartheid university in South Africa, as articulated by Lalu in 2007. In the contemporary global neoliberal HE order, such hegemony is most obviously visible in the material power exerted by U.S. higher education that reproduces cultural and linguistic conformity that is particularly in that nation's interests, while continuing to solidify and extend the interests of European whiteness. Obfuscation of the complicity of the minority world in the inequalities and suppression of the majority world was also prevalent in the goods of development discourses in the decolonization period post-World War II. More on this, read Kapoor, 2014. Some of which continues in the positioning of those of the majority world as lesser than, if not explicitly deficit, through the Sustainable Development Goals and the tasking of universities to drive that global agenda. The chapter now shifts to ask why the decolonization of knowledge matters. Recognizing these distinctions and their ramification, in what ways might the decolonization of knowledge matter to teaching and learning? There is a myriad of answers to this question depending on context and conceptualization. Within this section, several points raised by fellow scholars are discussed as openings for the consideration of those of us who are educators. The first is that the decolonization of knowledge is central to the conditions for academic freedom. While the decolonization of the curriculum university should not be seen as a metaphor which displaces the reckoning for the material restitution of and rights for land self-determination and sovereignty. As Tuck and Yang argued in their publication of 2012, African intellectuals have recognized that the struggle for epistemic freedom and academic freedom is a continuation of the long struggle for freedom, from which emerges much of the current decolonization drive. For a starter on these, refer to Ndlovu Gatshini, 2018, and before him Sahal, 1997. A fundamental ethical impetus underpins these contestations towards alterity, plurality, and democracy. As means to push against the dominant violence of marginalization, negation, exclusion, and enslavement. This is because the concern with decolonization is not only to do with hegemony, as I discussed in the last section, but also its creation of absence when there is presence. Mbembe in 2015 articulated this when he spoke about how this hegemonic tradition has not only become hegemonic, it also actively represses anything that actually is articulated, thought, and envisioned from outside of these frames. This is the epistemic injustice of the disciplines of the modern university, which renders the collective interpretive resources required for epistemic justice structurally prejudiced, as Keat articulated in 2014. Such a meso-curriculum may problematically reproduce the skewed faculties or dulled consciousness of students, academics, and collectives. De Souza Santos in 2007 offered metaphors to evoke that which characterizes colonialist social regulation, emancipation, and which continues in representations of knowledges. The metaphors are abyssal lines and gazes of dominant thinking. They map the subhuman by invisibilizing entire knowledge systems out of the imaginary of the modern Western university. The implications for the majority world, its knowledge systems, ways of being, and material realities are at the core of De Souza Santos's interest. What he suggests is that this ordering system persists in current times and implicates us all. Beyond the period of colonizations, such abyssal thinking colludes perversely in ways where human principles don't get compromised by inhuman practices. Such perversions inform various formations, subjectification, subjugation, social divisions, and stratifications. They impose subject-object relations of the self to the human other, the individual and collective. They shape relations of the human to non-human animals and constructions which distinguish and prioritize the human from nature. They are enacted through local and global stratifications of power, through such mechanisms as the state and soft power, elites and hegemony. They also impact on delineations of goods and the commons within he discourses. Such problematic formations play out within the factory of the university and related culture industries, including education and research. Harm, obliteration, and misrecognition of the knowledges that are othered by the modern university and by the political, religious, and economic systems with which it has colluded have entailed appropriation and extraction without mutual benefit. An example is how the more explicit colonialist appropriations of indigenous knowledges of the social and natural world have morphed in the current times of the global knowledge economy. Capitalist systems of subordination and of exploitation of African intellectual workers, for instance, were recently dubbed the black market of the current research industry by those positioned as research assistants in post-conflict research in a 2019 post by Mwambari and Owa. Similarly, those from the majority world primarily provide the invisible labor behind many of the large profit-making academic publishers, whose authors, editors, and editorial boards continue to be primarily peopled by those based in the minority world. This economy continues to practice the intellectual marginalization of those in the majority world, as Obeng Odum describes it, operating in the interests of the minority world rather than the global common good. Contestations and agential negotiations are exerted by such intellectual workers. Working from the perspective of sociology in England, Bamber posits that it is insufficient to only point to the unjust gaps, omissions, and silences created by the politics of knowledge production, by the modern university and its culture industries. She argues that what must be engaged with is why knowledges are excluded and what difference their inclusion would be for understanding. This is not the type of superficial added value reasoning for diversity. It is about accounting for the connected histories, as she articulates it. of imperialism across the geographical contexts and projects which have produced divisions and stratifications in knowledges. However, Stein and De Silva, in 2020, asserted that where decolonization differs to many other critiques of the university and modernity, is in its emphasis on knowledges plural, and in the insistence of pushing against the continuation of colonial dynamics which benefit the modern Western-oriented university. On page 549 of their text, they write that decolonial critiques, quote, refuse the notion that the primary violence of colonization is the exclusion of certain populations and communities from the supposedly universal promises offered by modern institutions. To name exclusion as the primary violence of this system is to, one, invalidate other ways of knowing and being by assuming that everyone desires access to the same promised futures and direction of social change, and, two, invisibilize the fact that these modern institutions do not simply exclude othered populations, but rather are made possible at the expense of violence against those populations. Unquote. Clustered around the decolonization of knowledge is critique for justice, to destabilize the philosophical foundations of Western modernity, to problematize the politics of representation and authority within the webs of knowledge formation and legitimization. As important to the critical project are those projects which are generative of plural knowledges for reclamation, repair, and recognition of what has continued despite, independent of, against or alongside the dominant knowledge, canonized and often weaponized by university. Thus, a central purpose underpinning what decolonizing knowledges does is remembering against the problematic construction of subject-object relations within knowledge formation. Funes Flores wrote in 2022 that this is the endeavor to, quote, unsettle modernity's dominant ontological and epistemological foundations by seriously engaging the conceptual potential of thinking with ethical dimension alterity and from geopolitical dimension exteriority, unquote. Such remembering involves demembering what colonialism did and does, which is not about memory, but a relocation in history, as Ndlovu Gatshini described it in 2022. A relocation in history that entails recovery and reclamation of authors. In the broad sense of those who generate and represent knowledges, authorship as an agentially creative and responsible role, and authority to hold the influence to inform, produce, and reproduce. In addition to the possibilities within research and relations with non-academic citizens and spaces, education offers space to disrupt reproduction of knowledge and to foster such remembering through critical and generative social and knowledge formations. I turn briefly to these possibilities in the next section. Nearing its end, the chapter asks, why the educator matters for decolonizing knowledge. A renewed call to democratize knowledge production and legitimation has been heralded, to which we are asked to respond. Recognizing the concerns identified in the prior section and how avoiding decolonizing knowledge may miseducate students and reproduce unjust, hegemonic, and harmful subjectifications of their relations to themselves and others, human and non-human. What roles might educators play in this endeavor at the level of the microcurriculum? The machinations of the modern Western-oriented university come with a set of processes, many of which are assumed. First, that knowledge is produced that is discovered or created by the university and legitimated through various assessment processes can then be disseminated as knowledge. The educational project at university and school levels then becomes about reproducing that produced by the university as if universal and value neutral, with contextualization, translation, and engagement being the purposes of learning. This construction between academic research and the content taught within educational institutions is a top-down imposition of that which is validated by the powers that be within the modern university's machinations. Presented as such, it seems to offer little agency or influence in terms of what occurs at the micro level within the classroom, and often too, its relations to the academic and non-academic world, including that related to the third mission, that is, the university's contribution to and engagement with society. Scholarly attention has been given to how values of knowledge are structured and given some wiggle room for the teacher and student within the microcurriculum. The tools offered to researchers by Bernstein in 1973 and 1990 is one such example, looking at the relation between content and form at the microcurricular level. He termed these classification, that is, the imposition of structure, boundaries, or insulation on the content of education, and framing as the degree of agency which teachers and students have over the form of their engagement with such knowledge. There has also been recognition of what De Carvalho and Flores Flores in 2014 called the thematic and theoretical sectarianism of knowledges by disciplinary structuring. This follows the pattern of disciplining knowledges through the rejection of theories that belong to the canon of other disciplines and the embrace of a small group, which encloses and delineates it as a distinct discipline. Some have framed the role of the teacher as the mediator or guide to the discourse conflicts on what is powerful knowledge. Including in my own writing, see, for instance, Beluigi, 2017, DeVos and Beluigi, 2011. In such formulations, the teacher as facilitator takes on the role of making explicit the enculturation of the tacit or hidden curriculum around the politics of assessment and of knowledge. In the name of academic success, they reproduce the dominant order as a means of epistemological access for students. In many cases, this is educational development, also known as industrial psychology. We know the system is skewed, but for individuals to pragmatically cope. The rules of the game are made transparent for the purposes of being complied with. Critiques abound, pointing to the dangers of discourses of access for success. See, for instance, Beluigi and Thondlana, 2022, and of product promotion C. White, 2019. Pragmatically, many equity approaches limited by political will may take on such approaches to be affirmative. However, as McKenna et al. Argued in 2022, they cannot claim to be transformative if focused on the microcurriculum without acknowledging the scale of the problematics in the ecology of HE, the institution's relation to its publics, and the politics of the knowledge project. Dominant notions of access for success within the disciplines threaten to ossify the norms and logics of academia and knowledge dissemination as all-powerful. Indeed, even when new areas of inquiry arise, they are hailed back into the knowledge structures of the minority world through resource inequalities, workforce mechanisms, and intellectual framing. For more on this, read Connell et al.'s publication dated 2018. Despite these machinations, power dynamics, and the dominant discourses of the modern university, counter-narratives about the agency of educators are being increasingly asserted. For instance, research on the hegemony of the global metropole in domains of knowledges by Connell et al. In 2017 points to how negotiations by academics and institutions can reshape knowledge production. Once structured by colonialism and minority-majority world inequalities, trade routes of the global economy of knowledges can be crisscrossed for solidarity, learning, and resistance. In their arguments for the decolonization of universities in Latin America, De Carvalho and Flores Flores posit academic practice as transgression. They hold that the rules and logics which transdisciplinarity follows are not always already inscribed by those of modern academic canons. De Souza Santos, as with others, has attempted to capture the zeitgeist and to also indicate the collective nature of the struggle. This is an excerpt from his 2007 text. Quote, "The complexity of this movement is difficult to unravel as it unfolds under our eyes, and our eyes cannot help being on this side of the line and seeing from the inside out. To capture the full measure of what is going on requires a gigantic decentering effort. No single scholar can do it alone, as an individual. Drawing on a collective effort to develop an epistemology of the South, I surmise that this movement is made of a main movement and a subaltern counter-movement. The main movement I call the return of the colonial and the return of the colonizer, and the counter-movement I call subaltern cosmopolitanism." Unquote. At the level of the microcurriculum, educators connect knowledges with learning, inquiry, critique, and with the experiential and representation in ways which can be dialogic and disruptive. For those who still have the agency to develop curricula, a paper by Andriotti et al. From 2011 offers a visualization of two lenses. On either side of the abyssal line, the lenses are related to universal knowing and relational knowing, in reference to interpretations related to the introduction of different epistemologies in higher education. They argue that when engaging with such knowledges, educators should grapple with political, ontological, and metaphysical questions. What many working on this assert is the importance of deliberation and of resistance. In a quotation to follow by Connell et al., published in 2017, the educator is remembered as a knowledge worker who is well placed to engage in several sites of struggle from micro to macro levels. They wrote, quote, "Movement in a democratic direction, then, is not ordained by history. If it occurs, it will be through social and intellectual struggle, as well as political and economic shifts. The approach we have suggested helps identify necessary sites of struggle. One is the situation of the knowledge workforce, always partly casualized, currently subject to increasing pressure from neoliberal governments and managements. Another is the scientific communication system, currently being commodified and concentrated in the hands of a small group of corporations, but challenged by a popular open access movement. A third is the formation of intellectual workers in education systems increasingly privatized and homogenized on a world scale, but also active sites of cultural contestation. A fourth is the production of knowledge in social movements such as environmentalism, challenging both the disinformation spread by the fossil fuel industry and the hierarchies of knowledge in mainstream science." Unquote. Operative criticism may be of value for educators. This is an umbrella term I wrote about in 2017, which encompasses various approaches of reflexive criticism concerned with what scholarship and authorship signify. By observing and being responsive to their reception, translation, and impact in context, Keat in 2014 argues that epistemic justice is key to disrupting the epistemic injustice within disciplines. As with decolonization, such conscientization is a process rather than an ending, but it is of fundamental importance for critical consciousness to develop and to inform action. It is the educator's role to facilitate operative criticism with communities of learning and academic practice. In dialogue with students in the microcurriculum and colleagues in the mesocurriculum, such praxis holds potential to destabilize prevailing mythologies and doxa, and to recognize the contradictions and oppressions enacted through knowledge formation and social formation, where some humans, non-humans, and aspects of the environment are objects of others, will, and consumption. This praxis is more radical than access, equity, technocratic critical thinking skills, or units of content. The intellectual, political, and moral elements of such impetus must not be reduced, simplified, or dehistoricized. There are already claims that this has happened to the radical impetus of the decolonization drive in South Africa. See, for instance, Madeleine Gozi, 2018, and in the standardization, domestication, depoliticization, and commodification of decolonization discourses in parts of Western Europe. See Abu Mogli and Kadiwal, 2021. Similar dulling occurred within the South African higher education system when the discourse of constitutional transformation was institutionalized. Reflecting on this latter phenomenon, Lang in 2014 argued this was because of the insufficient examination of, quote, knowledge for transformation, the knowledge that needs to be produced in order to make change possible, unquote. Over and above the, quote, knowledge of transformation, which is the knowledge we generate about transformation itself, unquote. Shahjahan et al., in 2022, offer directions for the possibility of a field of solidarities, growing from knowledges produced through educational research on decolonizing curriculum and pedagogy. They base this on a critical analysis of over 200 texts using a geopolitics of knowledge framework. What they found was that the themes that emerged were contextual when it came to meanings of decolonization, of actualizing decolonization, and of the challenges which they posed in HE situated within and operating across contexts. Educators are uniquely placed to enable such as field of solidarities by engaging students, academic and non-academic fellow educators in decolonizing knowledge. There is creative agency in representation, writing, and acts of narration. These commonplace modes of doing within the university can be enabling of the development of voice, authorship, and knowledges. The literary academic presence is one such locus for change. Larson, in a text published in 2018, described this as an author's textual expression of cultural, regional, linguistic, and scholarly orientation, which is disciplined within hegemonic educational processes for students, and further, within academic representational processes. In addition to how educators represent, a directly generative educational role can be played in creating the conditions for students to experience the power of counter-narratives of knowledges, to contribute to their formation and legitimation, and to extend the responsibility of authoring and authorship for the common good. The decolonial turn offers potential for a future pluriversity that does not alienate, minoritize, or other. To challenge the ideology of Eurocentrism that seeks to universalize the West and provincialize the rest. As Eleza wrote in 2009, African intellectuals have been exploring Afropolitanism as one approach which positions Africa at the center of things, not existing as an appendix or a satellite of other countries, as Mbembe asserted in 2021, or disciplinary fields such as in African studies. Such de-re-centering acts as a means for African researchers to see ourselves and our relations to others creatively, critically, and ethically before radiating outwards. Within this is the ethical injunction for the university's knowledges and ways of being to not be alienating to the life experiences of Africans, which Ratele evoked in 2019. Limitations to the agency of individuals and constraints on curriculum design are many. In contexts where political will and a critical mass can exert collective action and urgency, more openings are possible. In some contexts, this is happening through the access of first-generation students and, in turn, first-generation academics. Such conditions are being seized for cultivating academic citizens' responsibilities to end the miseducation of the misrecognition of the modern Western university to engage with just knowledges, and for educators to enact their roles as stewards and trustees of knowledges for the common good. Concluding this chapter, the relation of the curriculum to which knowledges are selected, foregrounded, and thereby reproduced through what is taught and what is learnt is not a marginal concern in a time when the social justice imperatives of public good have been all but emptied out and reduced to only a few publics within nation-bound stratifications and geopolitical priorities. There is too much importance to avoid engaging with the common good of knowledges. While many dominant voices in decolonization drives are understandably concerned with the human, these too must not be separated from the entanglements of the university's knowledges with the violences done to non-human animals and environments, which have led to the age of the Anthropocene and environmental melancholia. Decolonization thus extends dominant notions of the common. MB in 2015 articulated this as, quote, "It is about humankind ruling in common for a common which includes the non-humans, which is the proper name for democracy," unquote. The common goods of knowledges are situated, extended, delineated, and connected in their relations to the human and non-human subjectivities impacted in the classroom and beyond across the globe. The call to decolonize the curriculum is inclusive of the formal, informal, and hidden aspects of the micro, meso, and macro curriculum, particularly when calls are linked to decolonizing the university. This chapter has argued that the segregation of the micro curriculum of teaching and learning from these wider relations is a cause for concern. Decolonizing endeavors can be too easily compartmentalized, creating gaps in our academic practices which allow for the domestication of academic practice and even the commodification of this discourse. Such individual or institutional profit is gained to the detriment of decolonization serving the global common good. This chapter offers some deliberations about why teachers should actively engage their critical and generative agency within higher education when it comes to the decolonization of knowledge. Creating the environments to critique knowledge by facilitating the development of critical consciousness within students, colleagues, and one's own processes of inquiry and learning about the university is within educators' sphere of influence. Doing so would contribute to destabilizing the reproduction of the hegemonic ordering of knowledge delegitimation within the microcurriculum. It would open space to engage with knowledges marginalized, misrecognized, excluded, or destroyed without requiring their appropriation or assimilation, but rather relations of curiosity, desire, doubt, and recognition. Academics have power and responsibility as trustees of education and of knowledges. Exercising this with ethical humility may better serve to build the critical consciousness of academic citizens to the injustices of that, those harmed, to recognize and assert what should be reclaimed from that appropriated, to commemorate that which has resisted or continued, despite the modern university, and to work with those within and beyond HE who can strengthen that made fragile. Acknowledgements. I am grateful to the reviewers of my chapter, Jairo Funes Flores, Chris Naus, and Cheng Wen Huang, for their challenges of my blind spots and appreciations of my struggles with this chapter. Thank you also to my institutional colleagues and fellow migrant academics, Amanda Kramer and Mel Engman, for sharing questions about the quandaries of the why raised in this chapter, when considering ourselves within our current context in Northern Ireland. The final cycle of peer review by the editors was invaluable. Thank you, Laura and Catherine. My appreciation also to Terry Green for guidance and assistance with this AI generation process, which at the time of recording was a somewhat new technology. The reference list for this chapter is now going to be read. It follows APA 7 guidelines, Abu Mogli M and Kadiwal L, 2021, Decolonizing the Curriculum Beyond the Surge, Conceptualization, Positionality, and Conduct. London Review of Education, 19.1, 1/16. Al-Radi, M. Ibn al-HS, 1989. Naju Balaga, Sermons, Letters, and Sayings of Imam Ali. Ansarian Publications. Andriotti vs. Ahenekusi and Kupaji, 2011, Epistemological Pluralism, Ethical and Pedagogical Challenges in Higher Education. Alternative, an International Journal of Indigenous Peoples, 7/1, 40/50. Aristotle, 2004. The Nicomachean Ethics, J.K. Thompson Trans, Penguin Classics, Beluigi, D.Z., 2017. The Significance of Conflicting Discourses in a Professional Degree, Assessment in Undergraduate Fine Art Practice. Discourse, Studies in the Cultural Politics of Education, 38-209-21. Beluigi DZ, Taiwan NB, and Idaho CGEO, 2020, December 2nd. Sustainability is based on the faith we have towards the work that we are doing. The Conditions of Academic Citizenry in South Africa and India Panel. In M. Van Winden, K. Wimpenny, C. Hagenmeyer, and J. Beelan Chairs, Panel H50, Africa Knows. It's Time to Decolonize Our Minds, Leiden African Studies Association. Beluigi, DZ, and Thondlana G., 2022. In Whose Interest is Training the Dog? Black Academics' Reflection on Academic Development for Access and Success in an Historically White University in South Africa. Indy Thomas and J. Arde, editors, Doing Equity and Diversity for Success in Higher Education, Redressing Structural Inequalities in the Academy, Palgrave Macmillan, UK, Bernstein, B., 1973, On the Classification and Framing of Educational Knowledge. In R. Brown, editor, Knowledge, Education, and Cultural Change, Routledge, Bernstein, B., 1990, The Structuring of Pedagogic Discourse, Routledge, Bambra, G.K., 2020. Introduction, Roots, Roots and Reconstruction, Traveling Ideas, Theories. The Sociological Review, 68-3, 455-60th. Carvalho, J.J.D. and Flores, Flores J., 2014. The Meeting of Knowledges, A Project for the Decolonization of Universities in Latin America. Postcolonial Studies, 17-2, 122, 39th. Connell R., Collier F., Maya J., and Morell R., 2017. Toward a Global Sociology of Knowledge, Postcolonial Realities and Intellectual Practices. International Sociology, 32-1, 21-37. Connell R., Pierce R., Collier F., Maya J., and Morell R., 2018. Remaking the Global Economy of Knowledge, Do New Fields of Research Change the Structure of North-South Relations? The British Journal of Sociology, 69-3, 738, 57. De Sousa Santos, B., 2007. Beyond Abyssal Thinking, Boaventura de Sousa Santos from Global Lines to Ecologies of Knowledges. Review, XXX1, 166. DevOps M, and Beluigi DZ. 2011. Formative Assessment as Mediation. Perspectives in Education, 29-2, 39-47. Dawan N, Beluigi DZ, and Idahosa GEO. 2021. Disrupting the New Middle-Class Space of Indian Public Universities. Proceedings of the International Conference on Globalization of Professional Legal Education. Queen's University, Belfast Digital Library. Funes Flores, J.I., 2022. Decolonial and Ontological Challenges in Social and Anthropological Theory. Theory, Culture and Society, 39th, 6th, 21st, 41st. Hoffman F. and Kinzelbach K., 2018. Forbidden Knowledge. Academic Freedom and Political Repression in the University Sector Can Be Measured. This is how Global Public Policy Institute, International Labour Organization and UNESCO, 2008. The ILO-UNESCO Recommendation Concerning the Status of Teachers, 1966, and the UNESCO Recommendation Concerning the Status of Higher Education Teaching Personnel, 1997. Kant Urs, 2007, Critique of Pure Reason, Penguin Classics, Kapoor I. 2014, Psychoanalysis and Development, Contributions, Examples, Limits. Third World Quarterly, 357, 1120-43rd. Keat A, 2014, Epistemic Othering and the Decolonization of Knowledge. Africa Insight, 44-1-23-37. Lalupi, 2007. Apartheid's University, Notes on the Renewal of the Enlightenment. Journal of Higher Education in Africa, Revue de l'Enseignement Supérieur en Afrique, 5-1-45-60. Lang L., 2014. Rethinking Transformation and Its Knowledges, The Case of South African Higher Education. Critical Studies in Teaching and Learning, Cristal, 2-1-1-24. Lange L. and Parker G., 2019. The Institutional Curriculum, Pedagogy and the Decolonization of the South African University, in J.D. Jansen, Editor, Decolonization in Universities, pages 79-99, Wits University Press, Larson J., 2018, Other Voices, Authors' Literary Academic Presence and Publication in the Discursive World System, Discourse, Studies in the Cultural Politics of Education, 39-4, 521-35, Lertzman, R., 2015. Environmental Melancholia, Psychoanalytic Dimensions of Engagement. Routledge. McFarlane, B., 2021. Methodology, Fake Learning, and Emotional Performativity. ECNU Review of Education, 5-1, 140-55. Madlingozi, T., 2018, November 1st. Decolonizing Decolonization with Mfalele. New Frame. Marginson S. 2008, Towards a Global University Hegemony. Critique Internationale, 39-2, 87-107. Mbembe A. 2015, Decolonizing Knowledge and the Question of the Archive. The Wits Institute for Social and Economic Research. McKenna S., Hlengwa A., Quinnell, and Vorster J. A. 2022, From Affirmative to Transformative Approaches to Academic Development. Teaching in Higher Education, 2007-8, 1005-17, Mwambari D. and Owa A. 2019, June 8th, The Black Market of Knowledge Production, Convivial Thinking, Ndlovu Gatshini S. 2018, Epistemic Freedom in Africa, Deprovincialization and Decolonization, Routledge, Ndlovu Gatshini S. 2022, Lecture on Grappling with Complex Contemporary Politics of Knowledge and Contested Meanings of Decolonization in Africa. Personal Collection of S. Ndlovu Gatshini, University of Johannesburg, Johannesburg Gauteng, Obeng Odum F., 2019. The Intellectual Marginalization of Africa-African Identities, 17-3-4, 211-24. Ratel K., 2019. The World Looks Like This From Here, Thoughts on African Psychology, Wits University Press. Saul E. Ed, 1997. Women in Academia, Gender and Academic Freedom in Africa, Kodesria, Secures S, McCall C, Mejia J A, BBC, Masterza S, L. Sanchez Peña M, and Sviantek M. 2021, Positionality Practices and Dimensions of Impact on Equity Research, a Collaborative Inquiry and Call to the Community. Journal of Engineering Education, 110-1, 1943. Shahjahan R.A., Estera A.L., Sula K.L., and Edwards K.T., 2022. Decolonizing Curriculum and Pedagogy, a Comparative Review Across Disciplines in Global Higher Education Contexts. Review of Educational Research, 92-1, 73rd, 113th. Stein S., 2020. A Colonial History of the Higher Education Present, Rethinking Land-Grant Institutions Through Processes of Accumulation and Relations of Conquest. Critical Studies in Education, 61-2. Stein S., Andriotti Vigideo, and Sousa R., 2019. Beyond 2015, Within the Modern Colonial Global Imaginary, Global Development in Higher Education. Critical Studies in Education, 63, 281, 301. Stein S. and De Silva, J.E., 2020. Challenges and Complexities of Decolonizing Internationalization in a Time of Global Crises. Educacao Tematica Digital, 22-3, 546-66. Taki and Yang K.W., 2012. Decolonization is not a metaphor. Decolonization, Indigeneity, Education and Society, 11-140. White J., 2019, The End of Powerful Knowledge, London Review of Education, 17-3, 429-38, Zaval N.C. and Langa P.V., 2018, African Diaspora and the Search for Academic Freedom Safe Havens, Outline of a Research Agenda, Journal of Higher Education in Africa, 16, Zaleza, P.T., 2009. African Studies in Universities Since Independence, The Challenges of Epistemic and Institutional Decolonization. Transition, 23, 101, 110, 35.